Hello, and welcome to everyone watching and listening online, and to everyone gathered here today. It's always good when we can be together, whether it's in person or online in this way. Today, we're going to spend some time with the last major miraculous sign Jesus does in the Gospel of John before he's crucified. It comes in chapter 11, the midpoint of the Gospel of John, when Jesus raises his good friend Lazarus from the dead. And John only uses a few verses to actually describe this dramatic and pivotal event. So let's read it now, beginning in chapter 11, verse 38. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. And it was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Now, this is one of the rare occasions where I actually prefer the King James version of verse 39. In the KJV, Martha says to Jesus, "Lord, by this time, he stinketh." He stinketh. Stinketh. Try to find an opportunity to say that word sometime this week. If you live with a teenage son, it will be easy. "Lord, he stinketh. You can't roll away the stone." And Jesus keeps going. He said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." And when he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" And the dead man came out, his hands and his feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth wrapped around his face. And Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Here we see Jesus doing what good shepherds do. He calls his beloved sheep by name, "Lazarus, come out!" And Lazarus hears his shepherd's voice and obeys and comes out of the tomb. Jesus is also the good shepherd laying down his life for his sheep, Lazarus, so Lazarus can live. Because if you keep on reading through the end of chapter 11 and then get on into chapter 12, what you'll see is that this sign fortifies the resolve of the religious leaders in Jerusalem. They decide they absolutely must kill Jesus when they see all the many different people, understandably, he just raised somebody from the dead, flocking to him. Raising Lazarus from the dead is a big part of what gets Jesus killed in the Gospel of John. But that's not really what I want to talk about today. Rather than focusing on what happens after Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, I want to focus on what happens before. Because what happens before raises, no pun intended, a number of interesting and challenging questions. If you go back to the beginning of chapter 11, you'll find Jesus on the other side of the Jordan River where John the Baptist was baptizing people at the beginning of the Gospel of John in chapter 1. He's there because the last time he was in Jerusalem in chapter 10, his opponents tried to stone him for blasphemy. And he had to get out of town. And in verse 1, Jesus receives news from Martha and Mary, friends of his who live in Bethany, which is just outside of Jerusalem, where the people are who want to kill him. He hears news from Martha and Mary in Bethany that Lazarus, their brother, and Jesus' beloved friend is ill. And when Jesus hears this news, he says in verse 4, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." When Jesus hears that his friend is sick, he does not rush back to Bethany to heal him, nor does he heal him from afar, as he did an official son back in John 4. No, instead, when Jesus hears that his friend is sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Did Jesus allow his friend to die so that he could demonstrate his power and reveal his true identity by raising him from the dead? If so, I can certainly understand why Jesus didn't have many friends. But I don't think that's what Jesus is doing here. And here's why. Bethany is 1 day's walk away from where Jesus is on the other side of the Jordan River. So it takes the messenger 1 day to get from Bethany to where Jesus is. And then Jesus waits 2 days. And then he and his disciples spend a day walking back to Bethany. And when Jesus arrives in Bethany, he's told that Lazarus has already been in the tomb for 4 days. It's likely that Lazarus was already dead by the time the news reached Jesus of his illness. So why does Jesus wait? It's not so that he's giving Lazarus time to die. Maybe it is because he wants to leave no doubt that Lazarus is truly dead. I mean, really dead. I mean, fully dead. Not just mostly dead, but... because after 4 days, Lord, by now, he stinketh. Or maybe it's just because, as we see throughout the Gospel of John, Jesus is always in charge of his schedule. He goes where he wants to go, and he does what he wants to do, and he does it when he wants to do it, according to God's timing, not anyone else's. Because he's always in sync with the will of the Father, which in this instance means he waits 2 days before he goes to Bethany. And when he finally does get there, he finds 2 grieving sisters who are deeply disappointed with God's timing. He's on the outskirts of the village, and Martha comes out to meet him. Mary does not. She stays at home. And in verse 21, Martha says to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And then she says, "But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." She says, "If only you had been here, Jesus, Lazarus would still be alive." And then she seems to believe that he can still do something about the situation. Now, I don't think that means she's expecting Jesus to raise her brother from the dead. That's not on her mind. That's not what she's hoping for. Because when Jesus says in verse 23, "Your brother will rise again," she says in verse 24, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." She believes in resurrection. She believes in the general resurrection at the end of the age when everyone else will be raised from the dead. She believes that Lazarus will be raised from the dead, but not right now, not today, not before everyone else is. You dare not expect that much. And so this leads Jesus then to explain the meaning of the sign he's about to perform. It's another one of his I am statements in the Gospel of John. He says in verse 25, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? He asks Martha. He claims for himself God's ability to raise the dead and to give life. No more than that, he describes himself as God's life-giving power over the dead in the flesh. The resurrection is not something that will happen in the future. The resurrection is standing there in front of Martha. And because Jesus is the resurrection and the life, he says the faithful who die physically, die like Lazarus, which demonstrates that beloved friends of Jesus can and do get terminally ill. Those who physically die and believe, they live again. But then on another level, he says, the faithful never really die. Because the life they receive from God through Christ transcends death. Eternal life does not begin when Jesus raises us from the dead. Eternal life begins when we put our trust in Jesus. And it never ends after that. It's ongoing. Nothing, not even death, can separate those who trust Christ from the life and love and power of God. Do you believe this? He asks Martha. And she says she does. And then she declares that he's the Messiah, the one who's coming from God. Like so many people in the Gospel of John, the truth she speaks about Jesus is bigger and better and deeper and more profound than even she realizes. She's saying all the right things, but she does not yet believe that Jesus will raise Lazarus from the dead. She does not yet understand who Jesus is or what he can do. Lord, by now, he stinketh. Don't roll that stone away. After this, she goes home and gets Mary, her sister, and brings her out to meet Jesus. And there are others who have gathered with the sisters to mourn with them, and they come along as well. And we pick it up in verse 32. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. She says the same thing Martha says. If only you had been here, Jesus, Lazarus would be alive. And in verse 33, Jesus saw her weeping. And the Jews who had come along with her were also weeping. And he was deeply moved and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. And what comes next in verse 35 is famously the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. And this little verse has generated massive amounts of speculation. Now, why is Jesus weeping if he knows he's about to raise Lazarus from the dead? Why is he weeping if he knows what he's about to do? And one possibility is that he's weeping over the lack of faith he sees in Mary and the mourners. They don't believe. But I don't think that's it at all. The more likely reason is that as Jesus is surrounded by his friends and the other mourners, he is overwhelmed. overwhelmed by their pain and their grief. He weeps with those who weep. Yes, he knows what he's about to do, but that does not diminish the havoc death wreaks in our hearts and in our homes and in the world. Jesus weeps, not because, as some suggest, it's evidence of his humanity, which assumes that Jesus' humanity and Jesus' divinity were two separate components and they show up at different points in his life. Oh, look, that's Jesus being human. Oh, look, that's Jesus being divine. That's not the way it works. It also assumes that only humanity weeps and divinity doesn't. But if Jesus is God in the flesh who shows us what God is really like, when Jesus weeps, he is showing us that death breaks God's heart just like it breaks ours, and he weeps with us. I said at the beginning that this story raises several challenging questions. The most challenging question in this story for me is not why did Jesus wait or why did Jesus weep. The most challenging question in this story is the question Jesus asked Martha after declaring that he's the resurrection and the life. Do you believe this? He asks in verse 26, and then he restates that question in a different form in verse 40 after she says, "He stinketh." He says, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? Do you believe this?" It's the question for anyone who's ever been disappointed with God's timing. It is the question for anyone reeling from a tragedy that God has allowed. It is the question for anyone who has ever said, "If only." And haven't we all? Oh, if only we'd found the cancer just a little sooner. If only she hadn't been driving that night, or if only she had left 5 minutes earlier, 5 minutes later, or if only we had noticed how depressed he was, or if only I had a chance to say goodbye. If only Jesus had been here, the one we love would still be alive. N.T. Wright notes in his reflections on this story that Jesus' question of Martha, "Do you believe this?" challenges her and us to exchange our if onlys for if Jesus. Because if Jesus is the Messiah sent from God, if Jesus is the Son of God, if Jesus is the resurrection and the life, if Jesus is the resurrected Lord, then we can trust him with our if-onlys. Did you notice just before Jesus weeps, he asks Martha and Mary where you have laid Lazarus, and they say, "Come and see." There's that phrase again. Come and see. It's what Jesus said to his disciples at the beginning of the gospel when they ask, "Where do you abide?" Jesus says, "Come and see." And then he leads them on the journey to understand who he is, where he comes from, what he's going to do, and what it all means. Come and see. But Martha and Mary show us in this story that sometimes we're the ones who invite Jesus to come and see. They show us what to do with our disappointment, what to do with our heartbreak, what to do with our loss and our grief. They show us how to say, "Come and see," to Christ. Come and see the place of our pain. Come and see all the circumstances and situations and tragedies in our lives that stinketh. Come and see. And Jesus comes and sees and weeps with us. But that's not the end of the story. Jesus then also invites us to come and see. Come and see who I am. Come and see what I can do. Come and see that I am the resurrection and the life. Come and see the glory of God overcoming the darkness. Come and see the power of God in me overcoming death. Come and see and believe. My friend Josh Ross tells the heartbreaking story of his parents walking out of the hospital after their 31-year-old daughter and Josh's sister, Jenny, passed away. She'd been hospitalized 19 days after being diagnosed with a mystery kind of illness. And as they step through those sliding glass doors into a world shrouded with grief, Josh's mother says to his father, "Remind me again what we believe. What do we believe?" And after a long moment, Josh's father said, "The tomb is empty. The tomb is empty." If Jesus is himself alive and well, raised from the dead, seated at the right hand of his Father in heaven, if Jesus is the resurrected Lord, then in the words of Tolkien in The Return of the King, everything sad is going to come untrue. If Jesus is the resurrection and the life, someday everything sad is going to come untrue. And the question for us this morning posed by Jesus is, do we believe this?